Sailor Moon!
Now.
I was late.
Actually, I think I was late. Hang on.
Okay.
Okay, we'll go again. One more time.
It does come earlier than you expect it to.
Sailor Moon! No, that was awful. All right. One more time.
Okay.
Sailor Moon! Okay, I think we got it that time.
Yay!
Welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. Lindsay Leverage is here.
Hey, glad to be back.
And we are joined by a very special guest and returning champion, Dawn, of the excellent, by the way, Anime Nostalgia podcast, which you can find at animenostalgia.blogspot.com. Is that right?
Yes.
And also pretty much anywhere, you know, you get your podcasts. It's a great show. Highly recommend it. She's here today to talk about a little show called Sailor Moon, Sailor Stars, which we'll get to in just a minute. But first, I did want to discuss a movie. Now, Lindsay, you saw the film Knives Out, correct?
Oh, you bet I did.
Yeah, what'd you think of that?
Oh, man, that was good. I enjoyed it a lot. Was not exactly what I expected, but they went some places that I wasn't expecting it to go at all, but had some nice political commentary in there. And, you know, Chris Evans just being a bad guy again. I've kind of missed him being like a sleazy bro.
Heavy, yeah.
yeah, heavy. And just, it was a great time at the movies. I took my mom.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I not as much as I thought I would. I was hoping it would be a little bit more Clue-ish.
Yeah.
But that kind of goes away because they tell you exactly what happened about halfway through the movie.
Or earlier,
End of the first act, Then it kind of turns in like I feel like I was sort of sold a bill of goods about the supporting cast on this, where mm-hmm. they had all these character posters and the poster for the film has like the whole family and everything. They're only in it for about a third of the movie, and then it turns into Chris Evans and the other lady and Daniel Craig doing his Foghorn Leghorn thing.
Yeah.
Which is a lot.
One of the characters calls him out on that.
Which is a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot of fun. It's just, I kind of wish it had stayed a little bit more Clue-like and also lost about a half an hour.
Yeah.
It could have been about a half an hour shorter.
I felt like the resolution was pretty easy to guess, but I don't know if that's because I'm coming from a place where, like, I play murder mystery games and shit all the time, so I'm always, like, keeping an eye out.
But the murder mystery is solved, like, so quick that...
Even the twist, too. Even the twist with the medical bag, like, that whole bit. I kept waiting for that. Like, that's gonna come back.
Yeah, it's Chekhov's medical bag.
Yeah.
You know, so to speak. I did very much enjoy it, however... I do feel like, you know, my favorite film of the year, Ready or Not, ate its lunch. Had similar and much more hellacious and direct class commentary. Only 90 minutes. A little bit more direct and brutal, which, you know, I like that. Walking out, I was like, boy, I wonder if Rian Johnson, director of my favorite Star Wars movie, The Last Jedi, who made this. I wonder if he saw Ready or Not and was like, shit. Shit, they already did this.
Should have pushed that production through faster.
Yeah.
They're definitely complementary films. They have similar messages behind both. Rian Johnson's is more focused on immigrants' struggle in general and white supremacy.
Right.
And how that ties to class and wealth. But Ready or Not doesn't have the immigrant angle to it, but it's still, you know, wealthy white people in a big mansion working with the devil. So sort of the same idea.
It's very direct class commentary.
Yes.
Like they're both good. But if you have Ready or Not is out on digital now, I think it's actually out on Blu-ray now. So I highly recommend that one. Frankly, both of them, you're going to have a great time. So, yeah. Like, if you like that kind of thing. But yeah. I really did enjoy, at the end of Knives Out, Daniel Craig does get his, like, Tim Curry at the end of Clue scene.
Oh, where he gets to just, like, yeah, he explain. Just
gets to, yeah, he gets to go over the top with his accent and just explain, like, well, here's what happened, you know?
Right. I like the final shot of that movie, too, where she comes out with the cup of coffee that you see at the beginning that says, like, my house, my rules on it.
Yeah.
She comes out with that, and she's on this balcony, and she's looking down at all of them. Yeah. And I was like, yeah.
That's good shit. Yeah, it's a good one. I think it could lose about half an hour, but like, you know, fun.
Yeah, if I were to cut anything from it, it would probably be the whole like car chase off to right, find that bit.
That's
yeah.
the stuff where I felt like you could definitely lose this.
Yeah, basically when they leave the house, I was like, yeah, don't leave the house.
Yeah,
I felt like it should have been self-contained within the house.
They leave the house and then also the entire supporting cast behind.
Right.
It's kind of like, well, I don't know if this was a great idea, but
yeah, I gasped too. I mean, like, so one of the sons, he doesn't have a lot of lines, but he's, you know, this little like alt-right piece of shit. And he shows there's a part when the maid's going to get the money and he calls her an anchor baby. And I like gasped. And my mom looked at me and she's like, what does that mean? I was like, oh, God, you don't know. That was kind of intense.
Yeah, no, but like that's what you want. You want that. Yeah. You want that kind of direct commentary. You don't want something that sort of pussyfoots around these things. Like,
yeah,
he was making very direct commentary on
right. I mean, and he comes for the like the white feminism liberal shit too, because there's a couple of family that are like that. But as soon as you know, as soon as money's the issue, you know the
he plows right through it. The thing is,
yeah.
That is the same message that's in Ready or Not, which is don't ever trust a rich person.
Right.
Like, do not trust the wealthy.
Right. Because in Ready or Not, that would have been the husband, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So the so-called reformed one, right?
Yeah. Who turns out to, not be so reformed. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
I recommend them both, but. Ready or Not, still at the top of my list for this year.
Edges out ahead for you.
Yeah. Dawn, do you watch a lot of movies?
You know, for someone who lives like literally down the block from a movie theater, you would think I would see a lot more movies than I do. But like lately, I just like I come home and I'm just like I'm so tired. I just want to sit here.
Right, and watch some old ass anime.
Not even that. Just like I just like maybe want to sit here, maybe play a video game, and then just go to bed.
Do you have a movie this year that really stuck out to you? Even if you don't watch a lot of movies, is there anything you've seen this year that really felt special to you?
Oh gosh, I really liked Promare. I'm seeing it again this weekend.
Me too.
But I'm trying to think, what else have I seen this year? Like, I'd have to think back. It's been a hot minute since I went to the movies, other than seeing anime stuff.
You saw Alita, right?
I did see Alita, yeah. That was also really good.
It sure was.
Oh, I did see Midsommar. I thought that was interesting.
I liked that movie, too.
That was cool.
That was a neat movie. I know there's probably a few others that I'm forgetting.
Well, that's all right. You know, just curious.
But I did want to see Ready or Not, but that was, like, only in the theater for, like, a hot second and disappeared.
Yeah.
By the time I was, like, ready to see it, it had already left, and I was like, oh.
Yeah. Okay. Well. It stuck around. I mean, look, I live in Los Angeles, so everything sticks around for a little bit longer than it does in most other places, I think. Yeah, like I said, it's available now, you know, digital, Blu-ray. You can get it out of a Redbox, I think. So, worth
seeing. Oh, I did see Us. Us was really good.
Oh, yeah.
Us was interesting. It was like an extended Twilight Zone episode. Like,
yeah, kind of.
I enjoyed it, but thematically, I thought it got a little confused.
I still need to revisit it. I saw it in theaters, but the experience I got like rowdy co-watchers or whatever that were like talking through the whole movie and like exclaiming and stuff. And it's like, guys, stop. Like if you hate this for whatever reason, then leave. Why are you ruining it for everybody? And I haven't revisited it since. So that was kind of distracting at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking, go ahead.
I thought it was a little bit more ambitious than Get Out. Like, I think Get Out was probably the better of the two movies, but I appreciated the ambition of Us. Like,
yeah.
I liked how like out there and different it was. Mm-hmm. And it had some genuinely like really interesting and funny parts. So I was like, I like this. This is good.
Yeah, it was certainly a fascinating film. I think I do need to revisit it because upon walking out, I was like, well, I get what you were going for, but not as strong thematically as Get Out. Like, Get Out was, like, direct. And, like,
It was sledgehammer.
Yeah. It was very, very precise. Like, I felt like Get Out, like, he knew exactly the story he wanted to tell, and he had, like, honed in on exactly what he wanted to say. And with Us, it was like, okay, well, I did the one I really, really wanted to tell. This one is going to be a little more interesting.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you watch Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone.
I've only seen, like, a couple episodes of that.
Yeah, me too. I've only actually watched the first one that had the comic.
With Kumail Nanjiani. Yeah, like, I thought it was kind of weak, like, I feel like maybe Jordan Peele is stretching himself a little thin across all of this stuff. And so, it's not as, like, it's not as tight. Like, because because Get Out is on cable, like, all the time. And sometimes I'll just leave it on in the background. That is a tight script. And
that's a weird movie to just put on while you're doing chores or something.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, it is.
And so, like, but when that's on and I compare it to like his Twilight Zone and Us, I'm like, boy, you know, you really had it here. The rest of this stuff feels like it's getting a little threadbare, like it's getting a little thin. And I kind of want, like, and I feel like this is true across a lot of artists. What you want is like their best work. So give them time to make the thing they want to make. Mm-hmm. Like, don't rush it. Don't shove it out. Like, give them all the time they need to really hone the writing. And a lot of this stuff, sometimes it feels a little bit like, maybe they're not giving him enough time.
Maybe that's why, like, Ikuhara takes like a decade per show or something.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that and funding. Yeah. Well, speaking of Ikuhara, today's show is about a little show called Sailor Moon Sailor Stars. And when we talk about an anime like this in a series discussion, usually we start by going around the table, your experience with the show, how you saw it first. And Dawn, I'd like to start with you.
Oh, okay. So when I was young and anime was still like this thing that either it was a cartoon on TV that, like, you didn't know it was anime, or it was this thing, like, only really niche hardcore nerds knew about. I kind of had heard about Sailor Moon, like, right before it had started on American TV. And I was like, oh, that looks kind of cool. I wonder if I'll ever get to see it someday. Right. And then it started on TV, and I was like, oh, this is that thing that I saw that looked really neat, because I liked the I guess, the aesthetics of it. Like, I really liked the look and the feel of it, and it was just, like, really full of things that I liked personally, like celestial elements and astrology and mythology and, like, all that stuff. And so I was like, well, now I can just watch it for free on TV because it's going to be on TV. And I kind of laughed at the bits that, like, you know, someone like me, I could tell, like, oh, this is definitely, they edited parts here and here. Like, it's kind of obvious. Even, like, as a young person, I was like, you know, it's pretty obvious this is edited. Like, this is not how it was originally put together. But I still enjoyed it. And that was like one of the first anime that I was able to like convince friends to watch with me that didn't like anime. So like Sailor Moon is like really special to me because that was like a series that like I formed a lot of like friendships through and met people through that like some of them I still know to this day, which is kind of wild.
Yeah.
And, you know, so after it got canceled, I was like, oh, well, now I guess I'm going to have to look for, you know, like the Deke dub got canceled. So I was like, now I guess I'm going to have to like try to find the rest of it because there's more. And so that was when I got fan subs of the series and I watched it, the rest of it that way. And the first time I ever watched Sailor Stars was it had just started coming out in Japan, I think. And a friend of mine who lived in San Francisco, like one of my sort of like pen pal slash anime tape hookup people, was able to get me a copy of episodes that had been recorded straight off of Japanese TV. So they still had like the commercials and stuff in it. And it was like completely untranslated, just the show. And so the first time I ever saw Sailor Stars, it had no translation. I barely knew what was going on. And I was like, this is wild. Like, what is even going on here? it wasn't until like maybe.
That would have been in 96, though. That would have been.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Like, it was probably another 5 years before I got to watch the whole series fan subbed.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I was way off with what I assumed some of the stuff was happening.
yeah, but, well, it took a while for that show to get completely fan subbed. Like,
yeah,
those VHS, the VHS for that did not really finish until like the early 2000s, I don't think.
You had to get the VKLL tapes. They were purple.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. In those hard clamshell cases that they put little reproductions of the VHS art on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then like for a long time, I was the one like when my friends who liked Sailor Moon like found out I also liked it, like everyone was like, oh, you have to ask her what happens in the rest of the show because she's seen it all. Because most people I knew at the time, they'd only seen up to like where Deke had stopped. And then, you know, that was it.
Right.
So there was one point in time where also like I had pen pals who like also really had gotten into Sailor Moon, like through the TV syndication, the original one. And they were like, oh, my God, you know what happens? What happens? Please tell me. And so, like, I had to, like, literally handwrite, like, summaries of, like, what happened in each season. And I got so tired of, like, writing them that I just, like, photocopied those pages and sent them to people instead of writing it over and over.
Wow. Wow.
This was before we all had computers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that's a deep history.
Yeah. Deep Sailor Moon lore.
Lindsay, what about you?
Oh, God. So Sailor Moon is my origin story. And much like Dawn, I have a very deep history with it. I first saw the original Sailor Moon Deke dub on TV syndication. Now, I guess I'll just age myself here. I'm 32 now. So when that was on air, I was in elementary school. And I became obsessed with it. Like, I was, for about a decade, like, obsessed with this show, like the ins and outs of it, reading fan sites. I built a couple fan sites, on like GeoCities.
Did you have any spinning animated GIFs?
Oh yeah. I had like those GIFs from the fighting game and from the RPG and stuff. Like I had little gallery pages so you could, you know,
you had to have those.
Dude, I went to my uncle's so that I could scan the covers of the floppies that I got from the comic book store so that I could put them on my website because we didn't own a scanner.
Lindsay, that's pirating.
Yeah. Well, I bought those floppies back. Okay.
It was just the covers.
It's not like just the covers. I didn't do the inside like pages.
It's the not color like she's pages. Scanning the whole comic.
Yeah. It's just a joke.
Right. There was a pretty thriving Sailor Moon community on America Online.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Which we had. And so I had a Sailor Moon fanzine that I will gloat about at like the age of like 13 or 14, and I had over 1,000 subscribers to that, and I mailed it out weekly. It was always on time.
Lindsay, it's fanzine.
Whatever.
Not
we've been over this before. I'm not going to change.
Not zine. Zine? It comes from
We've had this exact same conversation on a previous episode.
It comes from the word
I know
magazine.
It comes from magazine, Zach. Just in my head as Zine.
All right, anyway. Go on.
All right. Despite my mispronunciation of the word, I still had over 1,000 subscribers to that, and I mailed it out weekly, and I made anime music videos on dial-up.
Wow.
Like, downloading, like, short, you know, 3 megabytes would take, like, 30 minutes to get clips, and then I would make character anime music videos and stuff. But, it was pretty much my whole internet life from, like, preteens to adolescence and stuff. So you can guess that I was very popular, right? a lot of the characters from the show were sort of like stand-ins for a friend group. So, like, you grow up watching it and you kind of imprint on that, like the core five of them. And it was like the first show I remember seeing at the time where it had like a fully female led superheroes. Like, my brother was really into Batman and I was too, but like, I didn't see She-Ra, I guess, before Zach chimes in. I hadn't seen She-Ra. So Sailor Moon was like my first female-led superhero cartoon. And I was just obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to...
Yeah.
The first time I saw Sailor Stars would have been, fully saw it. A friend of mine had the tapes. And me and her are still very, very close friends. She had the tapes. Uh-huh. She had, I don't know, maybe more allowance money than me or whatever. So she lent them to me. And that's how I finally saw Sailor Stars. But that was probably like freshman year of high school or something. So at that point, I'd like read summaries and everything about the story, but I'd never actually seen it until then.
Right.
And now I'm here on an anime podcast. So
indeed you are. Yes, you are. I've seen a shit ton of Sailor Moon, but I became an anime fan right around the time this thing was debuting, Sailor Stars, that is, you know, 95, 96. And at that time, like, of course I had seen the original Deke dub, you know, on TV and everything, and you know, it was all right. I didn't become like a super fan or anything, but this season, specifically Sailor Stars, has always kind of been like the forbidden fruit. Like,
right.
It's never come out. Genion never released it. It never aired on television. And I've always been a little fascinated with it. Like, wait, what happens in that? Then I found out, but like, like, and it's no surprise that it never wound up on American television, because this was supposed to be, you know, a family show, and concepts and ideas about queer people, which this show is full of, really weren't very evolved at the time. So of course it never aired here. And frankly, like, in my anime club, like, you know, we wouldn't show Sailor Moon because you could just watch it on TV, like, or just get the VH, like, anything that wasn't like, oh, here's a fan sub tape that's, you know, subtitled from a Laserdisc. We wouldn't really show that stuff. So this one, for whatever reason, never made it into the rotation. I'm a little surprised it didn't, now that I've seen it. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Not completely surprised that it didn't, because my anime club was ruled over by a bunch of 30-year-old straight men, so I'm not really surprised that it didn't make it in. But, I wouldn't say I've ever been, like, a huge fan of Sailor Moon, mostly because the storytelling is extremely repetitive, and Super S totally threw me off. Like, I just got off the train on Super S. Like
into the horse girl love story.
Well, no, it was just so fucking repetitive. Like, like, Super S is awful, in my opinion. Like, S is great. Like, that's the good one. And I like the S movie. I like the R movie. That's a good one too. Like, but those kind of get to the point a little bit faster, and Super S just bored me to tears. So I fell off. I could have gotten this fan subbed or something a long time ago, but I just never cared enough because it was like, well, Super S was awful, so I'm not gonna watch any more of this. Like, it ended at the end of S for me.
Yeah, with Super, it's a lot. It's kind of, it's even more different than the manga, because like it focuses a lot on Chibiusa, and even though like in the manga that arc does focus a lot on Chibiusa, but like the other characters are still there as well.
And yeah, Mamoru has a much bigger role in it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help that like in the anime, Chibiusa is written as like way more like aggravating than in the manga. So like when you're like, oh, this arc is all about her, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I think I made it about like 10-15 episodes into Super S, and I was like, eh, fuck this. Like, all right. I need Sailor Moon Kai, you know, like that's that's what I need in order to get through this shit. But anyway, so this finally came out on Blu-ray here in the States, thanks to Viz. And it has never been released here before. Genion didn't release it. It never came out. And now it's here. And
yeah, it's kind of crazy to like, because we were just talking about like our early experiences with it, and then to go forward like 2 decades and I finally own all of the show legally.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy.
It feels weird.
Yeah, it feels really weird.
It does feel weird.
If I remember, I think in some countries S also didn't air, or Stars also didn't air there, because of similar problems with like, you know, what we were having in America. Right. Like nobody wanted to touch it because they were like, this is going to be a nightmare to edit for TV because of, you know, just the climate of, you know, the social climate at the time.
It was popular in a couple different countries in Europe, but I'm not sure which one. I mean, the show as a whole, like in Italy and Germany, but I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure in Italy, what they tried to do when they aired it on TV was they tried to say that the three lights were the siblings of the Starlights.
Oh yeah, that makes complete fucking sense.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
They were like twins, and I was like, oh no.
What they do to the transformation sequence then, like edit the part where they grow breasts, like
I have no idea. I think they were just trying to make them like, oh, these are separate and like they work together. I don't know.
Okay, sure.
It's so weird. And then like in Korea when they aired it, I think they also changed some of the aspect. I do remember someone telling me that they thought the outfits for the Starlights were too revealing, so they like digitally colored in their
stomachs or something.
Their stomachs black, so it looked like they were wearing all black.
Like they were wearing like a jumper.
I got
a pleather jumper.
We will get to this, but those outfits are fucking ridiculous.
Yeah,
and when I see them wearing with the like low back and the straps,
yeah,
it's like, how do you put that on? Like
with
it's
magic,
like, it's like a strappy bikini top and just like hot you, pants.
How do with you magic? Even, obviously,
yeah, thigh high boots.
Only, I tell you, like, that's magic is the only fucking way you get that thing on.
Yeah,
like. Anyway, let's get into the show here. So, Lindsay, you have been assigned with the heavy lifting of summarizing Sailor Moon, Sailor Star. So let's.
I was born for this.
Who are you? Let's print it on your tombstone. Once summarized Sailor Moon, Sailor Star.
Was born to summarize Sailor Moon, Sailor Stars. Did it excellently.
Okay, so the beginning of this is basically the end of Super S, right?
Like, yes.
That's what this is. So what happens?
So they decided to kind of do a redux of the Super S ending, I presume only because Super S didn't rate well, even with Japanese viewers. So they're like, hey, let's just try that again. But this time we're going to bring the Outer Soldiers in because we skipped them for an entire season. And we're going to just like redo this whole thing. Galaxia released Nehelenia. Her name is kind of, it's easier to read than it is just to say, and we know that I'm not good at that. So, Galaxia releases Nehelenia from the seal that Sailor Moon put her in at the end of the fourth season, in which she decides to get her revenge on all of them for sealing her away, and because she hasn't dealt with her feelings of loneliness, so she's just gonna, you know, kill everybody, as you do. They defeat her with the power of friendship, and then the Starlights show up.
Like they do.
Like they do. And then the Starlights show up. Starlights are sailor warriors from a distant planet. They are masquerading as idols in order to spread their message in hopes that their princess, who they're trying to locate, will hear it. And then they can go back to their world and fix it, because Galaxia has totally, you know, destroyed it and a lot of other planets throughout the galaxy. Galaxia is also on Earth because she's looking for the Light of Hope. You don't find out what that is until really like the last episode, but she's looking for the Light of Hope and also to collect as many true star seeds as she can. The only people who have true star seeds are other Sailor Guardians. So she's basically been wiping out Sailor Guardians across the galaxy and taking their star seeds. She has some minions who are thrown out there early on to kind of do the heavy lifting. They're really bad at finding true star seeds. They're summarily killed either by Galaxia or by one another, as enemies do. Can't, you know, trust each other.
Right.
But, oh, go ahead.
So, well, okay. So, that's pretty much the first, I don't know,
half
of the show.
Yeah.
So in your opinion, like, how did you feel about the way this played out? Because I found myself, like, especially during the, oh, this is just the end of Super S section.
Yeah.
I found myself bored as fuck. Like, really bored. And then they introduced Chibi, right?
Yes.
Yeah, which is...
And she's just masquerading as Sailor Moon's little sister. Chibiusa had done the same thing before. Apparently, like, Sailor Moon's mom is really prone to memory wiping or something.
But the other thing is that, like, Usagi will not shut the fuck up about Mamoru. Like, will not shut up about Mamoru. Like, I get it. Your scrub lord fucking boyfriend is not here anymore. Because he gets, like, trapped in a mirror or something, right? And
at the very beginning,
he gets trapped in a mirror, and then she's like, oh, Mamoru, but then she has Seiya, who is...
Well, Seiya doesn't show up until after the whole mirror bit.
Oh, right, okay.
We kind of want to draw, like, a line there.
Sure,
for the Super S stuff, like, the Super S recap, I also found it pretty boring. Like, you've already dealt with this villain before. As much as I like the Outer Guardians a lot, and them getting more screen time, I just didn't feel like it was necessary. And it's about like 5 or 6 episodes of the season is dedicated to that.
It takes a while. It's the first, like, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, it's like the first 7 episodes or so of the show.
Which is half a season in normal anime time.
Which is, it's like 2.5 hours. Like, it takes a while.
I guess I'm the odd one out because I really like the beginning of the season.
Oh, really? What do you like about it, though? Like, I'm interested.
Well, I like that it's more like the manga, which I love the manga. And that whole first bit is almost like a horror story in some parts, which I really, really love when Sailor Moon gets to go to those, like, weird kind of scary places.
Yeah.
I know that's kind of... It varies because it'll go to like a weird dark place and then like immediately tonal shift to like some stupid like physical comedy or whatever.
Right. But you mean like when she goes to his apartment and it's like full of mirrors and he's just like staring in them?
Yeah, it's like really creepy. And like there's a really great part that calls back to like the first season where, you know, they're in the world of the mirror and... Usagi's like brainwashed and she can't remember who anyone is.
Yeah, she's playing with those like little flower, like talking flowers.
And Makoto is like, you know, trying to be like, oh, don't you remember? And she's trying to protect her from the Nihilenia. And she gets hurt and her earring falls off. Mm-hmm. And she remembers who Makoto is through her earring. And it calls back to like the very first season when she first meets Makoto. And like the first thing she notices about her is her little rose earrings. And I always thought that was a really cute little callback to like way the heck back. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just kind of stuck in my mind. And it was also just really cool because like there's that whole thing where they're going, they're trying to find like Nihilania's like castle or whatever, and they all get split up, and so you get a lot of characters paired up that like normally don't interact at all together.
Yeah.
And that's fun.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
That part was they put Rey with Neptune. The only part of that I was a little, okay, so my favorite is Uranus in this case, right? And that one episode like didn't get the same animation style as the rest. I don't know if you noticed that, but like they go back to like some parts of S round face style, and it's really derpy looking. Compared to like earlier, I don't know like which animation team was like on that or why that particular episode, because it goes right back to its more detailed style with the Neptune Mars episode after that. And I was like, why did my Uranus episode have to look like potato? Like why? But
the thing with Sailor Moon, like most famously, is like the whoever's in charge of the key animation for a certain episode, like that's how the whole episode will look.
Mm-hmm.
And so like you can tell like who the key animator is for like each episode just by the style, and some styles look really good and then some don't
look like potato.
Just to point out, the creative team on this one is vast. There are hundreds of people that worked on this. Each episode has a different director, and
I didn't know that.
It's a big team. So yeah, like there is I didn't mind that. It just reminded me of like Animaniacs or Tiny Toon Adventures, you know, where each episode kind of looks a little different, you know, like kind of like that, which is fine. Like Sailor Moon is a little bit more consistent than those shows are, but like definitely, like it looks very different from episode to episode sometimes.
Yeah,
it really does. But yeah, I really like that whole like little first chunk. It's like probably one of my favorite parts of Stars, which I say that some, and sometimes people look at me funny, but I'm like, no, I genuinely really like that. Like I wish that Supers had been more like that, honestly. Maybe that's why I like it so much.
Well, more creepy circus.
In my opinion, those first like six or seven episodes or so play like a movie. They play like, here's the big climactic film from Super S. Even though there is a Super S film, right? Like, there is one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to, two. I think they're going to split it into two.
Yeah.
Films.
Right. And, but this plays a little bit more like a movie. It's just, I was like, hey, come on, let's get to the, I know this is not the plot of this show.
Also, if you haven't rewatch Super S in a while, I could, or Supers in a while, it can be a little weird to like put that disc in and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, like, right. I thought this was a new series. Like, just turns out it's more the last thing you saw. At the beginning of the show, I found myself kind of exhausted with it, even though I sort of understood, like, oh, I see what they're going for here, you know, like, I get it. It's just that the real story doesn't kick in for six or seven episodes, which is a little nuts.
Like, I can understand that. But then, like, once you get into the actual, like, okay, this is actually Stars, like, there were times, like, in about the middle of that arc where I was like, okay, can we just get to the end, please?
Yeah. Well, that's a familiar feeling. So they finally get rid of Nihilania, right? And finally. And it turns out that she had a lonely childhood. And
she's really cute in child form.
She is.
And Usagi uses empathy like she does to get through this. And then we get the introduction of the Sailor Starlights. Or the Three Lights, as they are known. Lindsay, let's go into the next section of the show.
Okay, so we meet the Three Lights. They all have the same first name, which is weird. But it's Yaten, Taiki, and Seiya. And they're pop idols, and they're making songs to try and reach their princess so that she'll hear them and they can reunite and go back to their home planet and rebuild it. But Galaxia is kind of getting in the way of that because she's also attacking Earth now with the Sailor Animates, which are all corrupted sailor guardians from other planets as well. They have bracelets on that have, you know, turned their souls more or less into bad people. And
like you do.
Like you do. And Chibi Chibi shows up, this little, you know, roughly 2 to 3 year old. She limited vocabulary, just kind of moves in. Everyone's cool with that. And Mamoru decides to go to, everyone's just cool with that. They seem to ignore her for the most part, for most of the season. It's like, but isn't this really weird, guys? Like, isn't it? Aren't you, you know, maybe it's because she can't talk much. They're like, well, we're not going to figure that one out. Let's move on with our high school lives.
I guess also because they lived with Chibiusa for so long, they were just like, oh, she's just filling in a role.
Right. Yeah. They like say back and forth a couple times, like maybe she's your second child or maybe she's Chibiusa's child from further in the future. But we'll leave that thread there.
Here's the same.
Back to that later.
Here's the same character with a slightly different character design. Like that's basically
a smaller version of the already small kid. Mamoru, who has always been way too old for Usagi in this version, decides to go to America to continue his college stuff, but his airplane is abducted by Galaxia and no one knows about it. And I try not to think about that part too hard, because you have to imagine, like, what would actually happen if an entire airline just disappeared?
It's like
there were other people on that plane.
That's like 120 people dead.
They're just missing. No one knows about it.
That blew
no me. Newscast.
That blew me away. That was
Usagi
just like,
has no idea what's happened to her boyfriend because she just thinks he's really busy with college and isn't returning her phone calls or letters.
But that's because he's in another dimension.
It's because he's been dead the whole time.
Yeah, he's been murdered.
He was murdered on that plane this entire time. He was dead.
Yeah, but it turns out he hasn't been.
No, she has a star seed. He's dead. He's dead until he's revived at the end of the show. He's dead.
Yeah, that's how Sailor Moon works. Everyone's dead until the end when they get revived.
Which always fucking happens every fucking time.
Can't really complain about it. It's not any different than like Dragon Ball Z or something, right?
Yep. Yeah, sure, but all right.
Except for what? Like Yamcha? Was Yamcha really killed?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was really dead for a while because they were like, well, we need Goku and everyone else more than we need Yamcha, which, I mean, understandable.
Fair. Anyway, that's fair. We're getting ahead of ourselves here.
But anyway.
We're still at the very beginning, I guess. Because, okay, so Mamoru's dead, right? And Usagi's really sad, and she's wondering where her boyfriend is this whole time, but she never tells her friends that he's not returning her calls. In the meantime, she starts to build a budding friendship/relationship with Seiya, which is better in every way than her relationship with Mamoru.
Fucking scrub. Get with Seiya. Why wouldn't you get with Seiya?
Like, I don't know why. Because, okay, so the thing about Seiya versus Mamoru, in my opinion, is that Mamoru started out in the first season or whatever as kind of an interesting, like, he teased her and stuff. He had, like, a little bit of an edge to him, I guess. He was still a college dude hitting on a middle schooler, so.
Yawn.
But, you know, he had, by the time we get to the last season, he's just, like, the overly supportive, stale, I don't know, food guy. He's just like, yeah, Usagi, Usako, whatever you want.
Well,
I believe in you.
What?
Yeah, that's great. We can do that. What, like, he doesn't have, like, he no longer has, like, any sort of, like, interesting, discernible traits to him. So when you introduce Seiya, who's, like, funny and seems to think for himself and has a interesting career and some friends of his own and all this other kind of stuff, he just seems like a huge step up.
And then fucking transforms into a lady.
Yeah.
Like, now what's more interesting than that? Because, like, Mamoru doesn't do shit. He, like, he may as well not even, and, like, it, for this whole season, they write him out of the show.
Yeah, like which I feel like is something Ikuhara has joked that he'd wanted to do that.
Yeah,
for a really long time, like that he wanted to kill him off or something because he hated.
Who wouldn't? Like, he never does anything anyway. Like,
I mean, there's a huge meme that gets around the internet of Tuxedo Mask and Sailor Moon where he's like, "I'm leaving now," and she says, "But you didn't do anything."
Yeah, didn't I? Yeah, it's an old Simpsons quote, but like,
yeah.
This whole season was just like she's crying about Mamoru, and it's like lady, you have like a perfectly good trans boyfriend right in front of you.
And he's very upfront about his feelings for her too, yeah. Which I didn't remember from the first time watching it. But he's like, "Can I replace your boyfriend?
Ditch this.
I'll always care for you.
Ditch yeah. this boring scrub lord and get with this person because like they're the interesting one.
Get with the like trans alien fighter.
Yeah, yeah. Why not?
Like, why not?
Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Anyway, so it goes on. Continue.
So it goes on. The Starlights are apprehensive towards the Sailor Guardians for most of it because they feel like they have other goals. And Usagi is very much like, if we just talk things out, we can come to a resolution. That's kind of an overarching theme. Like, pacifism and diplomacy is like an overarching theme for the whole season.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they fight or bicker or whatever. And they're trying to repair that relationship. And that kind of just goes back and forth for most of the season until the animates have screwed up enough that they're all dead, and Galaxia's like, well, I'm just going to have to handle this myself, so I'm just going to kill everyone on this planet.
Okay.
And then she does so.
Let me stop you right there. How do you feel about Galaxia's armor?
Galaxia is a bomb-ass bitch.
Yeah. I loved her art. She has, like, tokusatsu, I mean, which, you know, of course, is not, it's not alien to Sailor Moon to have tokusatsu right. stuff. But she has that like golden armor, like chest,
kind of
like
Spartan looking. Yeah. Is what it reminds me of.
Yeah, it's like a breastplate, like
yeah.
But it's robot like.
Yeah, well, and the skirt's like a Roman gladiator type skirt.
Yeah, she looks fucking cool as hell. Like,
yeah, eyeshadow.
I thought she looked great. I don't know. What do you think, Dawn?
I've always loved her outfit, except for that weird part of her headdress where it looks like she has just a teapot sticking out.
Yeah, I don't really understand the head part.
Like, every other part of that is fine, but that little teapot part, I'm like, what is going on there? Like, do you stick your coffee in there? Like, what's happening?
Yeah, I feel like it's got to be inspired by something, but I don't know what it is.
Probably. But otherwise, I think it's great, except for, like, there are some times where, like, the angle they'll shoot her at, like, isn't very flattering. It looks like she has, like, pyramid Lara Croft boob going
on. Oh, yeah, okay.
But other than that, I think she looks great. Like, yeah. I've always liked Galaxia. She's so cool.
Yeah, she's really cool.
She's one of the best villains, I think. And like, you know, all the female villains in most of the female villains in Sailor Moon are super hot. So
right, I felt like for Stars though, like Galaxia is really good, and I like all of her minions too. Like, this is something where I feel like the anime really improves on the manga because the villain characters tend to be pretty bare bones in the manga. So they invent the relationships between each other, like Lead Crow and Aluminum Siren, sort of like camaraderie / friendship / partnership.
Yeah.
I really like how they play off of each other. And I thought Iron Mouse is hilarious.
Oh yeah. The anima mates are really fun. I always liked Iron Mouse, I think, the most, because yeah. she's really silly and cute.
Yeah, she's really cute. And I like the episode towards the end where she knows, like, she's going to get offed, and she carries around a rotary phone that just works no matter where she is.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
She carries it around in, like, a picnic basket.
The magic and then, phone.
yeah, and then by the end of it, she's avoiding her boss's phone call where she's going to get fired. And so she's being like stalked by these rotary phones wherever she goes, and she's just avoiding them. And she like hangs up on Galaxia once. And then when she finally brings her in to kill her, she's like, "Are you mad at me? 'Cause I hung up on you."
I enjoyed that character quite a bit.
Yeah.
You can tell when this was made because she's at a park and the phone starts ringing and people start looking around like, why is there a phone ringing?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple of there's a time too where Sailor Guardians are trying to get they're trying to call into a radio show to get Starlight's tickets.
Oh yeah,
and they're all like, it's actually a really great piece of animation because they're all five at these payphones because there's no cell phones, and they're like calling and getting the busy signal, and then like hanging up and getting more agitated and calling and getting busy signal. And I remember having to use like a hardline phone and calling into radio programs and that whole process. But
yep.
Yeah. Don't have to worry about any of that anymore. Everyone's got cell phones.
Yep.
Yeah, it's this part of the show, I think, is it's a little slow, but like it has a little bit more comedy in it. And like the only thing I do want to point this out is that like it feels like once the Starlights come into the show, there's only four characters anymore. There's Usagi and the Starlights, and no one else exists. Like they don't have anything to do. Which is,
I think these like little one-off character episodes to like focus on.
You might get 15 minutes of plot with one other character once, but for the most part, it is mostly about just Usagi and the Starlights.
Right, because like the central conflict is will she, won't she with Seiya for most of the season,
and they spend so much time on that. I was a little surprised because, like, you know, I'm used to the other Sailor Guardians kind of getting short shrift, like, you know, maybe sidelined, benched, basically, for a lot of the show. They'll show up, they'll be an enemy, they'll show up, they'll have their attack will be ineffective, and then Sailor Moon has to come in and, you know, do her attack. And, like, that's typically how it goes. But I was a little surprised to see how much... you know, Sailor Mars and Mercury and Jupiter and Venus were just totally sidelined for most of this show. Like, they're just like they have little comedy bits and stuff, but they're not really part of the main story, which I was a little surprised to see because that's most of the show. Like, that's a huge chunk of it.
I'm trying to think. Ami got like the one episode with the astrology teacher, and then Minako got the one episode with where she goes to the idol auditions. But I don't really remember like Rei getting an episode. Mako kind of does, but Usagi actually kind of takes over that episode where she goes on the cooking show. Like she weasels her way in there and ends up kind of stealing the spotlight. So
Rei got her episode where they all go to the lake to visit her cousin.
Oh, right. That was actually a good episode overall.
Well, and her cousin gets turned into a pottery
monster, and it looks like he's like making pottery dicks out of his. But I like that one because it was like homaging, you know, like Friday the 13th kind of stuff where, like Senya dresses up like a murderer and he's going to scare them while they're camping and. Mm-hmm. But then the clay dick monster shows up and
that's one of the reasons I remember it because there was sort of like a horror movie thing
vibe. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
They were there to film a horror movie. I was like, wait, what?
Well, it's actually a weird bit of continuity because they were there to film a tokusatsu special.
Right.
And then they later showed the special on the airplane in that airplane episode.
Yeah. I know. It's weird.
Against Sailor Moon. Jesus.
You also have to remember, like, the arc of the manga for this is only two volumes. So, like, there wasn't a lot of material to do. So, like, the writers had to come up with a lot of stuff.
And
some of it worked and some of it was a little weird.
Is this the shortest season by episode count, too? Because it's, like, 39.
Yeah, it's, like, 30. Yeah. Actually, I think it's, like, 30. Is it 39 or 33?
Maybe it's 33 when you take the Nephilania stuff out. I'm not sure, but
I can't remember.
But like the first season is like 50 something or 48 or something like that.
Right.
And I don't know how much R and S and Supers is, but
they're kind of close.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like 40, you know, around 40 episodes per season. This one is a little shorter, I think.
Yeah.
So to speak. But like, the middle of this, the middle act, I suppose, for me, it dragged. Like
you weren't into the Starlights don't like them. I'll make them like me over and over and over again.
I think it was just like, characters. It was just like, well, I know where this is going. So let's get on with it. Like, remember the episode where the Starlights fan club challenges them to a game of softball?
Yeah.
Remember that shit? What the fuck? What? And then they're like, comment, like, that was one of the ones where I was like, are you fucking serious? Like, are you kidding me here?
But, isn't it, like, it's anime, so you need to have, like, a sports like a baseball.
Yeah, they joined high school, so they've got to have a club rivalry.
Yeah, or you're just like out of ideas, and you're like, "Well, we got to stretch, so let's here we go."
Like maybe Dawn can talk more to it, but the differences between like the anime plot and the manga plot are way different, and I'm not sure why they decided to like diverge where they did. Like I understand coming up with more content because of how short it is, but why do you think they decided to, change almost all of it?
Well, for one thing, like they have to pad all those episodes, right? Like, cause there's only two volumes of manga for this and they want to do, if they want to do like almost 40 episodes, that's kind of hard. But also I think it's because like in the manga, like, I mean, spoilers for the manga if you haven't read it, but I
haven't read it in the last like 3 decades, but
right. But basically when Galaxia shows up, like her and the anima mates, like they just start killing each of the Sailor Guardians like one by one. So like right away, like, oh, Mercury and Jupiter are dead. Ray and Venus are Mars and Venus are dead. You know, everyone's dead. Like Mamoru, like dies first and in like a really gruesome way, like even worse than in the anime. So like, you know, what are they going to do for that in the anime? Like you can't just be like, okay, these characters are dead now and these characters are dead now and these characters are dead now and now the three lights are dead. Like,
yeah.
Like, that might be a little much. Like kind of hard to stretch all that into 40 episodes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and they took there's some major like plot differences too. Like Chibi-Chibi's identity in the manga is completely different than it is in the anime.
Oh yeah.
So
okay, maybe we'll talk about that at the end, but I don't know. Okay. I've never read the end of this manga, so I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah.
Like I've never read the end of the Sailor Moon manga. Actually, in fact, I've only read like the first two volumes or so of Sailor Moon manga. I've seen most of the show, but I'm more of an anime guy anyway. But like, yeah, like,
and also like most famously, like the creator Naoko Takeuchi, she like doesn't really like this season very much.
Well, she doesn't really like much of anything very much, in so far as I have heard. Mm-hmm. Is a nightmare woman to work with, so I'm a little surprised.
For this reason, I can't really blame her, but she has explicitly said that, like, to be a Sailor Guardian, you have to be a woman. And so the animators were like, well, we can't have Usagi thinking she might want to be with a woman.
Why?
Because I don't know.
Because it was 1996 and it's Japan. And right. Frankly, like, you know, Japanese LGBT culture has always been like a little bit behind US LGBT culture in terms of acceptance.
Well, I'm just saying, like earlier in the manga, you're talking Haruka about straight up kisses her in her like Sailor Guardian outfit.
But you're
there had already been like.
I'm pretty sure that she thought that would just be sort of shocking and she could get away with it. But like 90, you're talking 1996.
And also, they didn't include that in the anime.
Like, yeah, they didn't put that in the anime.
And I'm assuming they thought like, well, we already have the token. Like the lesbians over here.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
So, and they're way out in this season. So,
yeah.
These are editor choices that are overcompensating for societal concerns.
Yeah. So the writers and stuff were like, well, let's just make them men that turn into women, which, like, there's a lot of conflict between, like, fans of the series on, like, you know, which is better or which they prefer. Or, you know, whatever. That's a whole discussion.
Right, because in the manga, they're just cross-dressing. Like, you know, maybe using chest binders or something like that. But their anatomy is female the whole time. Yeah. Whereas in the anime, it's explicitly shown that they have male anatomy. And when they transform, it becomes female anatomy.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do they lose their dicks when they transform?
How would we know?
I mean, my thought process is yes.
Yes, right?
I'm assuming. Yes.
I mean, they're pretty much all Barbie dolls when they're naked, like as we see in the last episode when Sailor Moon's naked. She doesn't have nipples or anything.
Yeah, it's true.
But presumably, yes.
Yes, I think so. I'm on the side of yes, they lose their dicks. Like,
okay.
They transform into a woman.
Right.
Which is, you know, the dream of a lot of folks.
Yeah. Well, that's something I was trying to...
Perfectly normal.
You probably can't... I don't know if I can fully apply, like, modern interpretation of this, because I was trying to figure that out about Seiya, because Seiya seems to prefer presenting male, right? Like, there's even an episode where he shows up to their school festival, and they're running a maid cafe, and someone says, oh, Seiya, you could... you know, you could wait on people while you're here. And he says, I don't really want to dress like a girl. And then, but then when he transforms, yeah, obviously he gains
like
the...
LOL.
But when he transforms, he gains the female anatomy and definitely is wearing what would be considered feminine clothing as a Sailor Guardian. So I was trying to think, I was like, well, then is it just more like a genderqueer reading, you would think? Like he fluctuates between both? Or do you think maybe the transformation is considered like a necessary thing, but he identifies as male? I don't know. I was thinking about it.
You can't. I think the takeaway from this is that you cannot apply modern takes on this sort of thing to this show. You can't do it.
Yeah,
really difficult.
You can't do it. It's like without just being like angry about it, which I don't want to be angry about it.
Right.
You know, I get what they were going for. And I feel like that kind of queer representation, especially for trans folks, I think is helpful and fun. And yeah, no, it's not perfect. And mm-hmm. it's not exactly what everyone would want. But it is like I can see it as like, you know, if you were trans and you could just magically transform into a woman, mm-hmm. you would love that.
Oh, yeah. Right. I had a lot of friends that admitted that, like, one of the reasons they realized that they were either genderqueer or trans was seeing this season, because they were like, oh, God, wouldn't it be amazing if I could do that?
If I could just do that? If I could just, like, hold up my magic wand and then... be a woman?
Yeah.
Of course you would. Like, yeah, if you're trans, you would, of course you would want that. So
you can definitely read into that. Like, if that's your interpretation, like, honestly, that's really cool. And that's one of the reasons why I laugh about this season, that, like, you know, the writers and stuff were like, oh, quick, we got to make this less gay. And then in a way they made it kind of more gay. Like,
right.
Oh yeah. Significantly more gay. Like, this is, so much gayer than every other season of Sailor Moon, which is weird because Kunihiko Ikuhara directed a season of this, and this is somehow gayer than the one that he made.
Well, it's kind of like they built up to it, right? Like, the first season had an openly gay relationship in it between two men, but they were villains, but between two men. And then R, I don't know if there was anything really gay in R, but then, or S... really.
S has some stuff. Well, S introduces Haruka.
Introduces Haruka and Michiru.
So, it gets there. But,
yeah.
Like,
Super S has fish eye. But,
If you look at this in context, though, like, you have to take it in context. You can't just put it in a vacuum and say, like, well, why isn't this perfect representation or anything?
Right.
Right.
Like, you can't do that. But I do think that, like, watching it now, it's kind of like, oh, boy, sure was the 90s. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And right down to those hot pants.
This is shockingly progressive for the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, shockingly. Because no one ever makes an issue out of the fact that no one ever even says anything. Like, wait, you're a girl now? No one ever even says that.
Right.
Well, there is one point where Mako says something along the lines of, well, I guess, like, that ruins my chances because they're Sailor Guardians or something, but it's framed as also like, well, they're also kind of girls, so I don't know. it's weird because it's like the writers couldn't figure out, like,
yeah, well, they didn't know what the fuck, like,
yeah,
this is a creative choice that was made that was like, okay, wait, so they're men that turn into girls? Yes. Okay, well, all right, like,
yeah,
you know, like, and the show treats it like it's normal. So
yeah, so it's like I said earlier, it's kind of messy at times, but
yeah, well, everything is, you know. It's not,
but it's the same with like Ranma, honestly. Like Ranma, it was like the catalyst for a lot of like gay anime fans, but that is also like a pretty messy series when it comes to like representation.
Right.
Yeah, sure. It's not gonna completely validate you and every single personal feeling you have about being queer. Yeah. But it is going to show you some neat stuff, and it's fun to go back and look at something from, Jesus, this thing is almost 30 years old now. Or yeah, a little over 3 years.
Not wild.
Yeah. So, like, you have to look at it in context. And I don't know.
I do appreciate that, like, even though it's, like, way different from, like, what happened in the manga, they gave Haruka and Michiru a lot of really great, like, little gay nuggets in this series.
Oh, yeah. It's almost anytime they're talking to each other, like, somehow it ends up being like a reaffirmation of their romantic interest in one another and sexual interest in one another.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's cool. Great. It's good.
And like their whole, the final scene, like I won't spoil it, even though it's really old, I still won't. But like their whole final scene is very sweet and touching.
Can I spoil it?
We gotta get through the end of this fucking thing. So
I'm just saying, like when they hold hand, the whole hand thing, because that's like a reoccurring motif for their relationship, mm-hmm. is like it grips my heart and then squeezes it and then I cry a little. So
it's really good.
Yeah.
All right. So what happens at the end of this fucking show?
At the end of the show, Galaxia is like, well, I'm just going to have to kill everybody and take all of their star seeds.
Yep.
And she does. And they end up having a showdown inside of the Genga TV station, which should have been like a big clue early on, because that just translates to Galaxy TV. And her name is Galaxia, guys. So, I don't know. Maybe suspicious. Just showed up around the same time that shit started getting real.
Oh, and don't forget, she has to make sure to make a point to show Sailor Moon, oh, by the way, I killed your boyfriend.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We had to, like, watch that in real time.
Yeah, and like, that one made me laugh. Because
he was in a tuxedo standing on the wing of an airplane with his cane, and he's like, gonna cane you.
How could you not laugh? I was like, wait, hang on just a second there. Yeah, that was silly. But
this is why I'm so sad that, like, in the manga, he actually has, like, special powers.
Yeah, he has at least a ranged magic attack that he could use in the manga.
But in the anime, he doesn't have anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, she kills everybody, including most of the Sailor Guardians, including the Starlight's princess, who was in, like, a total of two episodes, and I'm not sure they even tell you what her name is in the anime, but it's Kakyu. Oh, they do? Yeah. I might have missed the subtitle where they did that, because it's not...
They call her Princess Kakyu. Like,
yeah.
That's her name.
Yeah. So they're all dead, and then Uranus and Neptune are like, well, we're gonna go out fighting and doing things our way by joining Galaxia's side and getting some of those bracelets. We'll kill a couple of our friends, but they totally know that we're killing them on purpose for a good reason, so it's cool. And then we'll attack Galaxia, and then that doesn't work, and they die too. And then Chibi-Chibi shows up, and she's like, hey, only she doesn't talk, but she's Galaxia's starseed, which is the light of hope, because Galaxia was like the ultimate galaxy warrior, and she sealed away chaos, which was causing the Sailor Wars, into her body, and then it corrupted her. So before it could corrupt her, she sent her Light of Hope starseed into the distance, and that became Chibi-Chibi. And so we find out that, you know, Galaxia was originally good, which empowers Usagi to try and heal her instead of kill her. So she gets, like, angel wings, and she's all naked and stuff, and she defeats Galaxia with the power of love and faith, and is able to eradicate chaos from her body. And then chaos returns into the hearts of man, because we all have a little bit of that in us, our own dark side, and the light of hope as well. And the day is saved thanks to the Powerpuff Girls. I mean, Sailor Moon.
Well, that's what happens.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
That's the whole show. I was born for this moment. It'll be on my gravestone.
Yeah. I was a little shocked that Sailor Moon spends the entire final episode nude.
Yeah. Like, I'm glad you didn't know that, and I'm glad I didn't spoil it for you. Like,
oh, you didn't know that?
You didn't know.
I've never seen it. Yeah.
Oh man, imagine being like younger in the 90s.
Yeah.
And getting that videotape and hoping to God your parents won't come into the bedroom.
And like, Dawn, what are you doing? That. I'm sorry, Sailor Moon's naked.
I swear it's not pornography.
Yeah. I swear this is just Sailor
Moon. It represents her pure of heart, you know.
Yeah, I was a little stunned, but also that was also like, oh, I'm piecing together why this was never released.
Right.
Like,
yeah, can you imagine having to digitally put a bikini on that?
Yeah like to get man. For the Toonami version, it's just like a blue one piece.
It's the whole episode too. Like, she's, yeah.
That like, would cost a fortune.
Yeah, it's like,
I mean, back in 90s money.
That I mean, would have looked bad too.
Yeah, it would look terrible.
Yeah. No, the end of this was just like, all right. I was just kind of like,
your heart was not moved?
Not really. Like, I don't know.
Were you not entertained?
I was entertained. I just wasn't like moved by it. Like,
oh, well.
Well, and it's also because like they've done this kind of thing before. Like, I've seen other Sailor Moon stuff that is like, they all die and then they come back. Like, yeah, all right. Like, I know no one's actually going to die. I know that already. Like, it's very Shonen Jump, which I don't think Sailor Moon ran in Shonen Jump. But.
No, it ran in Nakayoshi.
Oh. Right. But it's a
shoujo series.
Yeah, but it's basically Shonen Jump. Like, that's pretty much what they're doing. It's very Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
Everyone's dead. Oh, but they're not. Oh, they all come back. Like, yeah, all right. I know you're not going to kill any of these characters off.
Well, more accurately, it's more tokusatsu because that's kind of like the kind of stuff it was based on.
Sure. All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, they all pull from each other, so it's not.
That's true.
Yeah.
They all pull from each other. It's not that big a difference. But yeah.
Whether they're finally dead or not, I feel like didn't have as much importance to me as whether it felt like they thought they were dead, and then what they said in the moments leading up to that, assuming they were dead.
It felt this might be something you disagree with. This feels like storytelling runoff. Like, we don't have much left, so let's do this. And let's make it as dramatic as possible. But you know that none of these dramatic stakes actually mean anything, which is like, I don't know. In the end, I felt like, all right.
I think whether it works or not is going to depend a lot on how emotionally connected you feel with the characters or not.
Sure.
So,
yeah. Sure.
So for me, like when we were talking earlier about how we were first introduced to the series, these are like friends I grew up with. So when I first watched the show on VHS, like when they got to the very, very end of the episode and it has like the text that says like the end by, like, I cried. I was like 16 years old and I like cried just because it was like this finalizing feeling to like a chapter of my life. So revisiting it is sort of similar in that way, but yeah.
I totally felt the same way the first time I watched it. Like, I was like, wow, like, that's it. There's no more.
Like, yeah.
That's it.
I've seen all of it now. It's over.
Of course, then there was more.
Well, we don't. Crystal didn't happen, Zach. Okay, we don't talk about Crystal in this house.
It sure fucking did.
No.
And they're making movies now. It's totally coming back.
No. I've watched all of it, but I don't. I don't talk about that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Don, did you watch Sailor Moon Crystal?
I did.
What'd you think of it?
I have mixed.
Well, same thing everyone
that
else
thought. Sigh was very.
Yeah, same
point. I have mixed feelings about it because there's some parts that I thought were really well done, and then there's other parts that were not handled very well at all. And, you know, but that's kind of like the whole of Sailor Moon. Like, I feel like Sailor Moon is one of those things where, like, you have to really consume more than one version of it to get the whole picture.
Yeah. Like, you, I would almost credit the writers of the anime as fleshing out these characters as much or maybe even more than Takemichi did herself. And so for me, like, I own all the manga. I've read all of it. I believe I like the art a lot. But for me, it's more like a blueprint of the series than really like the whole picture of it. And it doesn't, on its own, it doesn't give me quite the same like emotional feeling, except for like the very, very end where they show her in her wedding dress or whatever. And that's like, that part still gets me a little, but I don't get quite the same like attachment to the characters in the manga as I do in the anime.
Yeah. As much as I like, the manga is probably one of my favorite Sailor Moon things. Mm-hmm. Like, I still feel like you kind of need the anime to supplement like a lot of the personality that of the characters have, because the pacing in the manga is so fast, you know?
Right. Yeah. You have like an enemy introduced and dead by the end of the chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Crystal was almost like a monkey's paw sort of situation, because I was one of those people who's like, yeah, I really want an anime that follows the manga storyline much closer and with art that's a little more similar to Takeuchi's style. And then I got it and I was like, wow, I didn't know that once you take all the filler episodes out, you're not left with a whole lot of personality for the characters to sort of live in.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, we also got like Toei like being like, oh, we don't really have to draw this very well because it's a net animation and no one will watch it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. way to show that you have a lot of faith in your fan base by just, right. Yeah.
I mean, like, I thought the third season was like a huge improvement, but there were still things about it that I was like, well, that could have been handled better.
Right. And I think the creative team on the anime, like, they had to fill in a lot of holes. Like, if you go back through the manga, like, Takeuchi doesn't really draw backgrounds in her battles, like the battle sequences and stuff. It's a lot of like floaty in the air fighting sort of thing going on. Mm-hmm. And then when you translate that to anime, you're like, well, now there's no sense of place, or you don't get quite like the same sense of speed and stuff because there's not objects to like rush past and things like that. Right. So the anime staff, I feel like, improved on it in that way by kind of grounding some of the art and the sense of time and place in the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, one of my favorite things, like Sailor Moon things, is actually the R movie. Mm-hmm. And like, when a lot of people like ask me like, oh, I kind of want to get into Sailor Moon because I never got into it, like, where should I start? I usually either say you can just start by reading the manga because it, you know, it moves along pretty quickly.
Yeah.
The idea really fast. Or you can just watch the Sailor Moon R movie, which tells you basically everything you need to know about Sailor Moon in a single movie.
Yeah, you get some of those flashbacks, so you know about her connections with each of the key four characters. There's mm-hmm. a central part about her and Mamoru's, you know, romantic relationship. They fight an alien on an asteroid.
Yep.
There's
a cool song at the end.
Yes, there's a really good song at the end.
People die, but then not really.
Yep.
And that whole thing was just like an original. It's not based on anything that Takeuchi did. So
right.
Yeah, no, that Sailor Moon R movie is quoted pretty regularly as like a lot of people's favorite Sailor Moon thing.
Mm-hmm.
They re-released it in theaters. They re-released it in theaters not too long ago.
Yes,
and it is
really good.
Yeah, it's commonly referred to as like, well, this is maybe the peak of the franchise. Like, maybe this is the best it gets. And it gives you everything that Sailor Moon, like you were just saying, gives you everything Sailor Moon typically is famous for in one, you know, 87 minute, you know, whatever.
It's like, maybe an hour.
It's so tightly written and it's so well done and it's beautifully animated. The soundtrack is amazing. Like,
it's gay.
It's super gay. Mamoru is actually like a good character in that movie.
Yeah.
I will argue that.
He gets kidnapped, like, you know, in distress.
Somehow in that movie, he acts more like how he does in the manga, which is the version of Mamoru I like the most. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the version I like the most, other than the more recent musicals where Yuga Yamato plays Tuxedo
Mask. Right, where he's played by a very handsome lady. Yeah.
Who I love her. That's the other thing. Like, I wish the musicals were readily available to North America, because like those musicals are really, really good. But like, I can never
Starz musical here, and I went and saw it.
Yes, I did too, because I was like, when am I gonna get this chance again?
Never.
But the musicals are so good, but like apparently there's just a lot of like contractual red tape for like ever getting them over here. So
yeah,
it's really a shame, because I would love to show those to people and be like, this is a really good version of Sailor Moon. It's like super well written, the songs are cool, the actors are great, it's super gay.
Yeah. You get the whole season of whichever one it's based on in like 2 hours.
Yeah, but like, you know, they never came over here, and they only released them on DVD, so you can't even import them unless you have a, you know, DVD player that'll play outside your area.
Yeah.
But those and like my favorite iterations of Sailor Moon are usually the manga, the 90s anime for character stuff, and Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon, which is the other live action thing that also never came.
Right. Right. That's like the tokusatsu one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good.
Some of the other girls actually get love interests in that one. So
Yeah.
I would say that is one of my biggest complaints about Sailor Starz, is that like, look, the Starlights are great and everything, but really they don't give the other ladies a whole lot to do. And, you know, they could have been given a little bit more to do, especially for the end of the show. But at the same time, I understand this is the end of a 200-episode anime series. So, like, I can't ask the writer's room for too much more than they're already giving me. Like,
it already feels like they were kind of scraping the bottom of the bucket. Like, okay, what haven't we done?
Yeah, what have we not? Are there any Jupiter stories left to tell? Eh, not really. You know, like, not really. Like, we got one maybe, but instead we introduced this whole new relationship, and now we're going to do that instead. So, like, all right, I get it. It's just, I don't know. It's interesting watching just basically the runoff of the end of a gigantic franchise like that. That to me was the most the most interesting, aside from all the sort of weird quasi gay stuff in it.
Yeah,
that was the most interesting part, was seeing like, oh, here's how you really got to stretch this. Like, it is hard to write this shit. Like, it is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And hard to write it in a way that's going to make people happy. That's really the thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like they did a fine job. I found myself a little bored, but, like, overall, I would say, like, yeah, it's all right. You know, I don't know.
I definitely don't recommend, like, binge-watching all of this.
Well, that's what we have to do for this show.
I know. But, like, I've told people, like, binge-watching Sailor Moon is hard because it's so repetitive. Yeah. The formula gets so, like, you know exactly how almost every episode is going to play out. So, like, if you watch, like, if you mainline, like, 10 episodes at a time, you're going to get burnt out, like, really quickly.
Try mainlining 30 of them in a row.
Yeah, I was watching like 2 discs a night. So. Yeah.
I actually went back and I rewatched the whole thing this week, and it, because I was like, well, you know, it's been a while since I rewatched it, and I was like, oh, like, I don't know how I did this when I was younger, where I just watched like 10 episodes of a thing every night. Like, ugh.
Yeah, I remember doing that with Kenshin, and I look back on it, I'm like, how did I do that? I don't. Yeah.
Much more energy, I guess.
Probably. Yeah.
Man, I saw somebody with a username the other day of Baloney Kenshin, and it
made that's great. I'm mad I didn't think of that.
Oh my god!
Same.
Whoever you are, bravo! That's beautiful.
Props to Baloney Kenshin.
Beautiful.
All right, you guys ready for some Twitter questions?
Heck yeah!
Okay. Sure. Well, actually, before we do the Twitter questions, in general, how would you rank the Sailor Moon seasons? How would you, Dawn? Let's start with you.
That's
this question has a correct answer.
No.
Oh. Oh, my. Okay. Someone's already judged. Okay.
So it's really hard for me because there's parts of certain seasons that I love more than that season as a whole. But I guess if I had to, you know, gun to my head, rank them, S is probably my favorite still. Then probably R, then I guess Stars, then season one, and then Super is dead last.
I mean, that would be my ranking too.
That's my exact ranking as well.
Oh, okay.
All right. So. Okay. All right. So let's get to some.
That was easy.
Yeah.
Easy enough. All right. Let's get to some Twitter questions. Amorphous Being asks, do you like Usagi's relationship with Seiya or Mamoru more? Spicy question. Apparently this is a big contentious issue among people who are really big fans of Sailor Moon.
It is.
Well, it's contentious among vanilla fans of Sailor Moon.
Yeah. The answer is fucking Seiya, by the way. Anyway.
Bitches!
What do you think, Don?
I'm gonna be the weird odd one out here. Okay, so I really love Mamoru. Like, I really do. Not his messed up, like, 90s anime version, though. Like, I don't... They really did him dirty in the 90s anime, and I will never be over that. It still makes me really sad. However, I do like how Seiya is, like, basically... You could argue he's kind of like how Mamoru is first introduced. Their personalities are kind of the same in some ways. So I like Seiya, and I think he's a good, like, character that's sort of like the, oh, maybe we could have been together in another life and in another time. But
if only we'd met sooner.
Yeah. Like, I love the drama of that. And he's an interesting character. But I wouldn't want, like, Usagi just be like, you know, see a Mamoru and just, like, break up with him. Because I think they're just too good of a couple. And I really like them as a couple. So so I would pick Mamoru. But I do like Seiya. Like, I mean, especially anime Seiya. Like, Shiho Niyama's voice is so good.
Yeah.
I really love her voice. Like, it made me really sad when she died in 2000 because... she was only 29.
Oh.
And she had leukemia. And and I always thought that, like, she was going to be in a lot more things after this because she was Seiya, you know. But that never happened. Like, the last thing she did was she was Deedlit in the Lotus War TV series.
Oh, okay. But not the OVA?
Not the OVA.
Oh, okay.
That. But, like, those songs that she recorded for Sailor Stars are just so good.
Yeah, I hadn't, so a long, long time ago when Winamp was relevant, I had a lot of Sailor Moon songs, like, from the CDs that were released, the character songs or whatever, and I used to listen to the Starlight one quite a bit, because it's good, and now, I don't have it now, but I might have to go seek it out.
Yeah, it's really good. You get kind of tired of hearing the one that they play in the anime over and over.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other song that he did, that was, like, a character single, I think, which was called, like, Love Stations Apart or something like that. It was really, really good. And I still really like that song, like, a whole lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, that I know there's a lot of people who are like, you know, hardline Say is better and hardline Mamoru is better. And I'm like, well, I like Mamoru, but I do also think that Seiya is a very valid love interest, and, like, I'm into that if, like, Usagi wants to, like, have a fling or something, but, yeah. Like...
Hey, you know, I wasn't returning your phone calls, man, and it had been, like, months at that point.
More, right. So. More people than ever are polyamorous now, so you could just have both.
Yeah. Like,
porque no los dos.
She's gotta live for a really long time when all their, like, lifespans get expanded, so...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean...
Just invite them all over to live
I would get bored if I was going to live for, like, hundreds of years. So.
And then when Seiya comes by, you could be like, hey, could you transform first? And then...
Wear the magical leather thing. <Yeah. laughs>
uh, From Bunny Bookends, if and when the Stars arc gets readapted after the Sailor Moon Eternal movies, what would be the ideal way to portray the Starlights, particularly when it comes to their gender identities and expressions? I say just keep it the same and say nothing. Say yeah. Don't explain it. Just like, yep, they become women. Fuck you. Who cares?
I would like it if they went to the manga and they're just women that pretend to be dudes. Like, that would be great.
I think I prefer the abstract. Like, yeah. There's something about it where it's like, no, I don't have to explain shit to you. I turn into a girl. Fuck you. Shut up.
Like, I might be biased because I like how in the manga, like, Usagi is more of like of a bisexual mind. And so like I'm constantly like whenever they want to hint that in the anime but don't, I'm like, darn it. Like, like, I would love for, you know, them to be like, hey, Usagi is seriously thinking of dumping her boyfriend for a woman. Like,
yeah,
that would be nice, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see the appeal of both, but I'm
lol.
But I kind of like the switch during the transformation just because it's also really unique. I still don't know if another show has done that.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So I mean, it's sort of like the first and currently still the last, I think, that's done that. And so it's, I don't know. I kind of like it.
Yeah. I mean, I do see the appeal of it. Like, if they could handle it better.
It makes them not knowing each other's identities also make more sense. True. Like, Saiya's definitely not Starfighter. They look a lot alike, but Starfighter's definitely a woman. So. Yeah.
I mean, even when, like, you listen to them talk, she talks differently.
Yeah, their voices change. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I can see that being totally valid. But, like, I mean, either way, like, as long as they get someone with a really cool voice, like, I'm down with it.
Yeah.
All right. Two questions from Rose Bridges, a friend of the site, a writer and contributor. How would you rank each season of Sailor Moon in levels of gay?
Okay.
Well, this one's Sailor Stars is definitely number one.
This is definitely the gayest. Yeah.
Totally.
After that, I don't know.
After that would be S. After that would be season one for all the
Zoisite,
Malachite
stuff. Yeah.
Right.
And
Supers has fish eye. I was saying earlier.
Yes. Supers.
Also, the Amazon trio is just. They're gay circus people.
Always dead last is Supers.
Well, R would probably be last, though, right?
Yeah, I can't. I don't think there's anything gay about R.
Yeah.
Other than I can see, like, the sister villains being pretty draggy as far as, like, drag queen type flamboyancy, but that's kind of stretching.
Most of the villains kind of are.
Yeah, that's so, true enough.
I mean, I've seen drag queens actually cosplay Sailor Moon villains, so.
That's what I was thinking is, like, the girls' costumes in R would be perfect for a drag performance. Like the, what's her name? Because their names are changed. Not Pets. The Mars counterpart.
Oh.
She's got like a huge like feather boa skirt thing. It's just like all feathers down there.
Koan?
Yeah. Koan. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
like
that's
drag queen
I think that's the outfit I've seen.
Yeah.
Like, most on drag queen. Cause it is a really cool outfit. It's like it's kind of a, the original outfit it's based on, I believe, was a Therry Mugler outfit.
Possibly, Takeuchi liked borrowed stuff from all kinds of fashion lines.
No,
and stuff.
Actually, I think it was Alexander McQueen.
Okay, well, then that would make sense.
Yeah.
All right. Second question: how do you think the season stacks up compared to its manga equivalent, especially the portrayal of the Starlights and the ending?
Well, we've talked about the Starlights already, and we started to get into they diverge greatly.
Yeah.
I think one that would be followed the manga storyline would be pretty interesting if it was done correctly, you know, where they actually go to like Galaxia's home base and there's more like sailor, like corrupted sailor guardians there, like Leith and Nemesine. I might be pronouncing that wrong. It's Greek. And heavy metal Papillion and stuff like that. That would all be really cool to see animated, but it would have to be done correctly. And so far, Crystal hasn't given me a lot of faith that they could do that.
Yeah, they also have that whole thing with the Galaxy Cauldron where,
the Galaxy Cauldron and Sailor Cosmos, and
where, like, for a while, it does seem like they're all final dead, like, dead, can't be resurrected dead.
Yeah.
Which makes the story feel like it's got a little bit more weight to it.
Yeah.
Of course, at the end, it's, psych!
Psych, and now Usagi's getting married.
Yeah. And I would like to see that whole, like, ending where, like, they get married and stuff.
And she has the beautiful dress. I just want the beautiful dress.
Really. For years in the late 90s, like, fans, there were rumors, like, oh, they're gonna make a new movie and it's gonna show them getting married.
Yeah, yeah.
That was, like, the big rumor for, like, years. And that never happened, so I was always kind of sad about that. I was like, even just like an OVA, like,
please,
please,
please.
So, like, I kind of hope that we at least get something like that animated eventually, but not in like a really cruddy way.
Yeah.
It would also be cool to see an animated version of Sailor Cosmos that also looked really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That looked good.
But, I don't know. Those might be asking too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows? At least we have the musicals.
Yeah.
From CC Takato asks, what's the one change in the anime you like better than the Stars manga? And what do you like better in the manga than the anime?
Okay. Don, you can go ahead and go first.
Well, I do like that the Three Lights get a little bit more, like, character fleshed out in the anime. Because, like, in the manga, they're just kind of there.
Yeah, right.
You get a little bit with Seiya, and, like, in the manga, it's, like, the relationship is more, like, he's implied interested in her, kind of, like, and she's like, oh, okay, that's nice. But, in you know, they really expand upon that in the anime, like, a lot.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that, because it gives a little bit more, like, you know, kind of like the previous, like, seasons of anime. Like, oh, there's character building here. Like, now we know more about your personality.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's good. But I still think that the ending, the whole battle against, like, Galaxia was, like, a little cheesy. Like, oh, Usagi has angel wings and Galaxia has devil wings. Oh, yeah. The symbolism. But, you know, when you're a kid, like, because this was made for little kids, like, you know, that is just very striking. And you're like, ooh. But, like, as an adult, you're like, okay.
Yeah, I get it.
So it would have been interesting to see more of, like, you know, kind of, like, try to incorporate the ending of, like, the actual manga, even though, like, a lot of the ending of the manga is, like, very, like, wordy and talky. So I guess that doesn't make a very exciting kids show.
Yeah. It's a little cryptic too. It's sort of like, there's a magical cauldron where all the star seeds are made. And and they kind of use the same concept of, like, instead of chaos going into everyone's heart, it goes back into the cauldron where it'll be reborn again at some point or another or something like that. But, I think if I were going to, I really like the characterization in the anime, especially with the villain, like the animates. And I mean, I like the additional focus on Haruka and Michiru when they do show up and their banter and stuff. Like,
it's so good.
But as far as the, and then as far as the manga goes, I guess the only thing that I would change is probably some of the ending buildup. I would have liked them to, you know, like said, go to Galaxia's, like, home base and kind of work their way through there and face off the different foes on the way. And that's how she ends up losing people as she goes towards the end.
And I totally would have loved to see, like, in the manga, Princess Kakyu turns into Sailor Kakyu.
Right. Yeah. And she has, like, an attack that's based on poker.
I would have really loved to have seen that in the anime. In the anime, she just kind of stands there and then dies. And,
right, like, yeah, exactly. Like, they've been looking for her for the entire season, and then she shows up and she's like, well, you guys, you got to work together. And then like two episodes later, she's like, well, you guys, I'm going to die now.
And, my okay. job here is done. Now I'm dead.
Yeah. Yeah. But you didn't even do anything.
She didn't. It was she didn't so do sad. Anything.
Yeah. It was pretty sad.
Okay. All right. Well, that actually does it. That is the extent of our questions and the end of our discussion here. Dawn, thank you so much for coming on by and talking Sailor Moon with us. We really appreciate it. Love your show, and you can check her out at animenostalgia.blogspot.com. Once again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dawn.
Oh, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Lindsay and Dawn for stopping on by. Theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes and any place you can find podcasts, and leave us comments and everything. We'd really appreciate it. It helps the show. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all next week.